You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
Welcome to Before They Were Alive, an ongoing and extremely nerdy conversation through the Disney animated canon in chronological order. That's right, I said Disney animated canon. We're sailing from the horizon, back to our home, our island, coming into our view beneath the podcast sky. Oh, we're back from new shores we've been exploring, returning to tell our story, connected with both the land and sea. Finally, we're back to who we're meant to be. Hopefully along the way, we enrich the viewing experience, have some fun too. We're discussing the 63rd film in the canon. Michael has rightly named this era of the Disney canon the Imperial Era. Are we still in it? Since I'm making this up as I go, I'm going to date that from Big Hero 6. That was the first Marvel property that was turned into a Disney animated property. And conveniently, also the first movie that the new Chief Creative Officer of Disney Animated Studios, Jared Bush, worked on. So by that reckoning, it would make Moana 2 the 10th film in this era. 10 films is on the high end for an era, but it's not unheard of. Maybe we'll continue discussing that. Probably we won't, but you can never tell with us. Part of the fun of watching all these movies is putting them in conversation with one another. So this is a sequel, but the creative side didn't really get the band back together. Notably, former directors Clements and Musker, they were the cornerstone directors of 7 of the biggest films in the Disney canon. They retired after the first Moana. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote the soundtrack for the first song, made the unfortunate decision to lend his creative genius to Mufasa, so he wasn't able to join in. The aforementioned Jared Bush is back again on screenplay. He also wrote the screenplay for the first Moana, but this time he also gets a story credit, and story is not the strongest point in this movie, or is it? You know, who can help me answer that question? Gather around if you want to hear from the greatest wayfinder of all time, a living legend, and besties with a demigod. I think that's true. It's Dr. Michael Farmer. Hey. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Josh. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Michael, you and I both loved the first Moana. Do you remember those halcyon days? That was 2016.
I remember really liking the first Moana. I don't remember anything I said about it in that episode, so I might contradict myself, but do I contradict myself very well? I contradict myself.
Hey, that was a long time ago, so, you know, that we discussed that. So, you know, always reserve the right to change your opinion, you know, to get better, to improve.
Well, before we attempt to talk about this movie, do you want to explain why we've had an 8-month gap? It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah, it's been a long time. So we're back in more ways than one. We're back to talking about Disney, and we're also back just as a podcast period. So, I turned my family's life upside down at the end of the last school year. I quit my job with the school I was working at, and was looking for a new job. I found one in China, and so my family and I have all moved to China, and so that is where I am podcasting from today.
Which is where you podcasted from when we first started the show as well.
Yeah, that's right. So longtime listeners will remember.
So we had a few glorious years where we didn't have to schedule these either early in the morning or late at night. And now we're back to, it's early in the morning for you and in the evening for me. Although I think the way we used to do it is it was usually Saturday morning for me and Saturday night for you.
Yeah. So we'll find a new rhythm, I'm sure. But yeah, the power of the internet to bring people together, you know. So it's good.
We were going to continue talking about the 1001 Nights this month, but I could not. Once we decided to do it, I didn't have time to read it because I'm reading a bunch of stuff for senior thesis projects at my school. So we'll be back to the 1001 Nights hopefully next month.
Yeah, we will continue those.
Would almost definitionally have to be better than Moana 2.
Almost definitionally, yeah. So, oh man, yeah. Michael, can you believe I went back and looked at our rankings from when we ranked this, the whole series of movies. Do you remember how high you had Moana, the first one?
Did I have it in the second tier?
You had it at number 7. Number 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe I liked it that much.
I was surprised too.
But I mean, the first one's a really good movie.
It is a very good movie. I had it at number 8 in my ranking. So, you know, what could go wrong when you have a movie that great?
Well, and I will say this. Moana 2 is better than Wish and Strange World.
Okay, so I was going to throw this at you that I felt like this is real, from my perspective, this is really three big stinkers in a row. And we've watched a lot of movies, and despite all the ups and downs, the only other three really big stinkers in a row that I would say was Brother Bear, Home on the Range, Chicken Little. Like those are the three big stinkers in a row, other than setting aside the wartime era films, because those ones don't really count. They're kind of
right. And other than Three Caballeros, I don't know that I think any of those are stinkers exactly.
Yeah. So So would I put Moana 2 as bad as those others? Probably not. I think, you know, it would be the outlier among those stinkers. But I did not like this movie very much.
No, it's bad. It's bad enough that it makes you wonder if the first one was also bad. You know, if we were overrating the first one severely.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it does kind of like it's stink, retroactively affects the first one. But I don't think, you know, I haven't watched the first one again in a while, you know, but I bet I've seen it in the last year. And I think I still really like the first one. So, but you're right. This one is.
So you've seen the first one more recently than I have then. So I think you need to make the case for the non-continuity of these two movies. What makes this one so much worse than that one?
Well, I think this movie, it feels extremely nonsensical to me. Like, it's difficult to even engage with or critique because it's like the things that happen from one moment to the next, it's like there's missing pieces. Like, the movie itself doesn't seem to connect together. So the scene that for me most highlights this is the moment when they're on some random island, with the shipwreck of the ancestors, and Moana is getting her like pep up speech from Maui, and she says something along the lines of, "Everything I've done since we've left the island has been wrong," which, if you've watched the movie, is not true. Like, she's not been making a lot of mistakes. A lot of things have happened to them, but she hasn't been making a lot of crazy mistakes. And then he says something like, "Nobody likes sucking at their job," which, okay, it's not like it doesn't make a lot of sense. But then he gives her this the pep up song, which we can talk about the song itself later. And so now she's feeling like, okay, I can approach the team and bring the team back together. They go over to the team, and the team's already on their own, come back together, rebuilt the ship, and they're also ready to go. So there was no need for, like, Moana's downness doesn't make any sense. Like, why is she feeling like the weight of this whole thing is on her? And then she comes back to the team, and she's in a new, like, quote-unquote place, right? Like, inside, internally, she's gone through some shift because of Maui's pepping her up. And it doesn't matter because the team didn't need her leadership at all anyway. Like, they're already reconnected also. So, like, and that's just, like, to me, a microcosm of this whole movie. Like, there is no, like, nothing connects to anything else.
Well, and you know the history behind this film, right?
Yeah, so I think that's worth mentioning. Go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
I didn't know this until I was reading about the movie after I was dissatisfied with it, that this was supposed to be a Disney Plus series, and they cut out a bunch of connective tissue to make it a feature-length theatrical film. And that makes so much sense, because it does kind of jump from point to point in ways that don't make sense. Now, the thing you're talking about, it's hard to imagine what connective tissue has been taken out that would make that make sense. I mean, maybe you would have half an episode or something where her incredibly annoying team manages to fix the boat. But still, nothing we see from her makes her seem like a failure at all. In fact, one of the problems with this movie is that Moana is hyper capable. She's good at everything she tries to do. She never fails. Things kind of go pear-shaped for her, but it's never because she's done something wrong or made a bad decision at all. So I think the move from miniseries to movie does explain some of the problems with the plot, but my guess is it would be a problem even if this were eight episodes or however long it was supposed to be.
Yeah, and that's a totally, like, I totally agree, because so when I had the same situation. I didn't know the history of the movie until I was reading up on the movie. But one of the things that I had said, you know, just talking to friends and family about this movie is how, what's the name of the new bat god thing, whatever she is. I'm blanking on her name.
Oh, anyway. I don't remember. Bat Lady.
Bat Lady. Yeah. So Bat Lady feels like she belongs in another movie. She comes in with no backstory. There's a little bit of hint at it between her and Maui. And then she sings a song to Moana. Get Lost is the name of that song. And Moana decides to get lost, which doesn't appear to have any effect on Moana or the plot of the movie for the rest of the movie, you know, like
it's not clear exactly how that changes anything in her approach.
It changes nothing. Like, it really changes nothing, which is, you know, like, again, like, it's just a frustrating part of the movie. And then so it never comes up again until the mid-credit scene. Like, that's the next time that you even see this character. And so, like, yeah, it just felt
she's
like,
a bad guy when she starts singing the song, and inexplicably she's a good guy at the end of the song. And it's weird because the song, especially early on, is very much set up as a poor unfortunate souls situation where she's kind of seducing our heroine into doing the wrong thing. The only thing we've known about this woman so far is that she works for the evil god, and she's got Maui tied up. He says that, I can't remember exactly what language he uses about her, that she's bad news, that she's evil or something. Mm-hmm. And then inexplicably, she's good at the end of the song in a way that doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah. It does feel like 20 minutes were removed from that part of the movie, for sure. Yeah. Matangi is her name, by the way. I looked it up.
Okay, thank you. So Matangi is just, again, characteristic of the plot of this movie not making any sense. And so I could see a world where this is a miniseries where we see Moana actually having some failures because she's decided to follow Matangi's advice. But then that never materializes within this actual movie. So,
Or we see her... You know, she's kind of got Chosen One vibes, right? She's Neo from The Matrix in this movie. And I don't remember enough about the original movie to remember. It certainly didn't have a problem with it the way this one does, because she's coming into her own in the first movie. But here, you know, she's Jesus Christ, basically, right down to dying and resurrecting at the end of the movie. You can imagine a version of this movie where she got kind of full of herself because of that. And so she ends up being obsessed with the idea that she has to know the exact way, and she alienates her team. And because of that, Matangi is able to sing this song and teach her that what she really needs to do is, no pun intended, let it go and let the ocean help her find the thing she's looking for or whatever. But it doesn't do that either. And so you end up with this situation where Moana makes no sense, Matangi makes no sense, and the mission makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the case for how this movie is not as good as the first one.
at least one of the reasons why it's not as good as the first one. Here's the first thing that struck me about this movie, and it might just be that I'm tired of this style of animation. So again, you've seen the other one more recently than me. The facial expressions in this movie. Did you just want to punch everybody? They all look so smug with every facial expression they make. Is that something that was true? Has that changed since the first movie? Or have I just gotten grumpier?
No, I feel like you're right. I feel like that's something that started to come in. In Kanto maybe. And in Kanto, it's still a little like charming in a way, like maybe because it's the first time that they're doing it, like doing the hyper facial expression type thing. But then I really started picking up on it in Wish, the last one that we watched, and I don't remember much else about Wish except for that. And so yeah, I think this is just a new style of animation. I was actually thinking just before we jumped onto the podcast, like, man, we used to talk about the animation and like we had our favorite animators that we talk about. Like these movies have just become such a nebulous like void to me. Like I hate to say that, but like it's just I don't even know who's making these movies. Like I couldn't name a single like animator who's working at Disney these days, you know. And some of that
is just, that's probably on us as much as anything. Because we're kind of disgusted with the movies, we don't do the kind of loving research that we used to do for the ones that we loved. You know?
Yeah, I think I agree that it's somewhat on us. I also think it's somewhat on Disney itself. Like, I mean, there was a time when Disney put out features with every movie, with every feature they put out, they had like the background feature stuff with the, you know, interviews of the animators and all that sort of stuff. And I feel like they've moved more towards the, they've moved away from highlighting the animation team and more towards highlighting the, what do they call it? The creative leadership team at Disney. Mm. And so even when you do try and do research and find the background information, you run into a bunch of interviews with Jared Bush and Jennifer
Lee.
Yeah. And maybe the songwriters, you know, I just feel like they don't.
Ooh, if I were in charge of this movie, I'd want to keep the songwriters as far away from the camera as I could.
Yeah. So,
well, infinite drop off.
Yeah.
From Lin-Manuel Miranda to what are these people called? Something in Bear. It's Emily Bear is the second songwriter's name.
Yeah. It's, here I have it in front of me. I think.
Branson and Bear. It starts with a B.
Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear contributed songs, replacing
Barlow and Bear. Yeah, oh yeah. My gosh! Is there a single song you would consider memorable in a positive way from this movie?
No, I think all the songs are fine, but there's nothing that's like, yeah. I mean, the first movie had some really good. Really, really good songs, and this movie does not.
So. And I would say they, at least one of them, is not fine. I would say "Can I Get a Chihu" is such an obvious piece of wannabe Lin-Manuel Miranda rap that it really might be the worst song in the Disney canon. I would have to sit down and look at a list of all the songs. But Can I Get a Chihu has got to be bottom 5% Disney songs.
Can I Get a Chihu is really, really bad. And it's this is one of those things where I had like the, does the Emperor have clothes moment? Because I'm reading, you know, the Wikipedia page on Moana 2, and it's Can I Get a Chihu was nominated for the 2024 Hollywood Music and Media Award for Best Original Song in an Animated Film. And I know to be nominated, like, is, you know, there's always backroom deals and stuff. Like, it's not like, you know, people are really watching every movie and coming up with what they believe are the best. I get that. Like, I get that Disney's, like, pushing this song forward to be nominated. But come on. Like,
yeah.
That movie, yeah. That song
An
is
unremarkable
terrible.
Song in every way.
It is terrible.
Every song from Brother Bear is better than Can I Get a Chihu?
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's probably true.
I think every song from Brother Bear might be better than every song in this movie. I'm telling you, the only two songs I remember in this movie are the ones that annoyed me so much that I would not have finished the movie if I didn't have to record with you about it. Because the other one, and this is a character animation problem as much as a song, but the one they're singing on the boat to try to get the other, all I can think of is cast member, which is what they call the people at Disney World, the other crew members excited. What's that? Is there a better time than this or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Oof.
Nothing is better than this, I think.
Nothing is better than this. That's right. How did they move from such a good soundtrack to such a bad? Well, you know how. It's that Lin-Manuel Miranda was not available. I don't think he made a professional decision not to do this. I think he was just busy doing Mufasa, and so they needed somebody more quickly, and so they got this Branson. I've already forgotten the name. Barlow and Bear to do it instead. But boy, it certainly didn't make me want to look up their other musicals.
Yeah, no, it was, like you said, the drop was steep. And in some ways, that's to be expected. I mean, Lin-Manuel Miranda is obviously in a class of his own. But, yeah, it was hard. It was hard sailing, for sure.
Hard sailing. And I've already called them the most annoying characters in the movie, but I think we should talk about her crew here. So this time she can't sail alone. So she takes with her the pig, who I was actually surprised to learn had not sailed in the first movie, because I just assumed that he did, that her cute animal sidekick sailed with her, but he didn't, which is fine because he doesn't really add very much to this movie. But he goes with her, as much help as he's going to be. His job seems to be mostly to almost fall off the ship a number of times. And he's not even very funny about it, like the chicken is. Hey, 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 it's the chicken.
Hey, hey, it's the chicken, yes.
Although they go to the chicken too much in this movie. Like, it's a funny gag, but it happens way too often. So she takes the pig with her. The rooster comes. But then she also brings three people with her. One of them is Maui's biggest fan, who you think is going to be in love with Moana, but that doesn't really come up, I think, because Disney is afraid to do a love story in a movie like this, because it's so much about female empowerment. Mm-hmm. I feel like ever since Frozen, they've been kind of slow on the draw to do love stories for their female protagonists, which is fine. I don't care. But he's super annoying, because when he meets Maui, he just goes nuts, and it's annoying. Then she brings the shipbuilder, who is this hyperactive, hypercritical New Zealander woman who is one of the most annoying characters I've ever seen in a Disney movie. I don't want to hyperbolize here, because there's a lot of annoying secondary characters in Disney movies, and I know that we can't even really be nostalgic about it, because from the very first episode of this podcast, I hated Dopey. but my annoyance with her was Dopey levels, for sure. And at least Dopey has the common sense not to talk.
Yeah. Yeah,
where she talks all the time. She explains everything that's going on the screen in that Netflix way, where you can be folding your laundry, you don't have to be paying attention to the movie, and she'll explain it to you. Mm. You were about to say something. I'm sorry.
No, I was not. That's a good point. So there is this like whole reality of the way that we consume our pop culture these days. That you're right. Like I didn't even think about the folding laundry type thing, but you're absolutely right. That's 100% in here.
She's supposed to be some sort of super genius, but mostly what she seems to want to do is destroy the ship while they're in the open ocean, which, and she has this catchphrase she uses for a little while. What is it? Fail?
No, it's life is learning and then death. Learning, failing, learning, then death. Something like that. Yeah.
That's right. Failing, learning, then death, which you think is going to pay off, but it doesn't. And she stops saying it halfway through the movie, which thankfully she doesn't say very much after the halfway point. She comes back in and finally does save the day in the climactic battle against the storm god, because she reconfigures the ship to move faster. Mm-hmm. So at least she does something, unlike the third crew member, which is the truly baffling one. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish with this character. If they were just trying, because it's not like old men are part of the group of people whom Disney is trying to reach. Because if they were, they would make very different sorts of movies. Maybe they heard our podcast, Josh, and decided that what we really wanted was an old man who is skeptical of the entire enterprise, because they bring this guy on. And why do they bring him on, Josh? Do you remember?
They're going to need food.
He's a farmer. And so I guess they're going to grow food on the boat.
Mm-hmm. With salt water.
And what does he add to the proceedings? Nothing. And we find out once they're on the open ocean that he can't even swim.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a really interesting decision, especially talking about those two back to back, because on the one hand it's like, okay, wait, we've got a problem. They're on this little raft for days. How do they live and survive? Like, they can't pack enough food. Oh, let's bring a farmer, right? So like there's like a bit of like if you want to call it logic, you could almost call it logic there. But then at the same time, they're like, hey, you know what else? Like, we can rebuild the ship in the open ocean. there's no blinking at that, you know, like that's totally fine. Yeah. I don't know what you call that. It's like, they're trying to make this a realistic journey, but it's already like completely unrealistic. And so why? Yeah.
Right, and if they were trying to make it realistic, why would they bring a farmer?
Yeah, a farmer doesn't make sense. Well,
I don't know what you would bring. Somebody who knew how to preserve food?
Yeah, I don't know.
A cook?
Yeah, a cook.
A cook would make sense. But why would you... A farmer? And also, how do you live on a Polynesian island and you don't know how to swim? This is a community whose entire existence revolves around the ocean, and you don't know how to swim. And then also, why would you agree to come on the trip? You're already mad. You already don't want to go. Why would you not say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't come, I can't swim? I feel like that would be a really good excuse to not go if you don't want to go anyway.
Yeah. I'm thinking probably each one of these characters had a episode kind of dedicated to them and their like story arc, and it you know, when it stopped being a miniseries and became a movie, it got eliminated and basically boiled down to that one song. I think that's probably what happened.
Yeah. Well, and each of them has two or three lines in the opening of the movie where you kind of are introduced to them, and you blessedly don't realize that you're going to have to spend much of the rest of the movie with these three unappealing characters.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, they disappear midway through the movie and don't play a major role again until the end, especially the farmer. I mean,
yeah,
they could easily have removed him from the movie and it would not have changed the plot of the movie at all.
Yeah. I think the opening song is probably the strongest point in the movie. And you're right. Like, there is a lot of tight narration there. It gets you caught up, you know, it reintroduces the world. you know, the target audience that they're going for wasn't alive when the first Moana came out. So, you know, gets everybody up to speed, you know. And I feel like that it shows that there was possibly a stronger, you know, a stronger story or something here at one point, because that part is pretty good and pretty tight narratively. You meet your core characters, like you said, and then it all starts falling apart, because that's when they obviously had to start ripping things out. And I don't know if they were hoping that we wouldn't notice. I don't know. Like, it feels like the movies that are coming out of Disney these days, it's like, what are the, like, it's just to keep these characters in front of us in some way, you know, to like sell merchandise.
There's a real give the pigs their slop quality to this movie, right? These morons will love anything we give them, so let's give it to
them. I hate to say that, but it feels that way a little bit. It's like, well, this will give us a reason to put Moana on a bunch of backpacks again, you know? Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, unfortunately, we'll get the live action Moana later this year.
Oh, and that's true too. Yeah, we get, yeah. So
now I will confess, I gave up as soon as the credits started. I turned this off because I felt like I had dedicated enough of my life to it. So I did not see the mid and post credit scenes. It sounds like they're setting it up for a third one, where the coconut crab from the first movie teams up with the god from the second movie to come back and get revenge on Moana. Is that right?
And it's hard to say, you know, like, if that's something that's like really going to happen, or if they're just like I said, because Matangi drops out of the movie. So I don't know if they're like really setting it up for further sequels. I wouldn't put it past them. They're working on Frozen 3 and 4 right now. So yeah, Moana 3, I think would definitely, you know, be in the works if they want it to be. But at the same time, it was like, you know, in the most positive light I could spin it, they were just trying to wrap up Mantongi's storyline to some degree. Although they do introduce the new character, I mean, he's in the movie, but not in the movie, right? Nalo is in the movie, but not in the movie. Like, they talk about the god Nalo.
Right, you never even see him.
Yeah, but you do see him.
Yeah, he's just a storm.
Yeah, but you do see him in that mid-credit scene, so, yeah.
It's like introducing Thanos at the end of Avengers.
Exactly, and it felt a lot like that. So I think they are going for that kind of, you know, it worked for Marvel for so long that you know.
Yeah, because they were making good movies. They always learn the wrong lessons. This is something we talked about a lot in the late 90s. They always learn the wrong lessons.
Yeah, I think that's true.
But you can't expect a bureaucracy to learn.
Yeah, I guess not. I don't know. Okay, so I wanted to throw something at you, Michael, about this. Speaking of introducing this god right at the end. So I had a friend over who watched this movie with me, and I have his quote here. He said, this is a pagan modern-day myth of narcissistic self-satiation through self-achievement and self-improvement. And I wanted to talk to you specifically about the pagan modern-day myth. I felt like, in some ways, it's giving this movie too much credit.
Yeah. I don't think it rises to paganism.
No, but so this is interesting because, so there's another podcast that I listen to. It's called Lord of Spirits. It's got... it's a couple of Orthodox priests. Father Stephen Damick on there, he talks about the mythologies basically in some ways being, he calls them demon propaganda. So the idea is that there's a true story of Yahweh and his love for the world, but there's always this like usurping power in mythology that is seen as the good guys, right? So like Zeus like overthrows the Titans, or
Prometheus brings fire to mankind.
Right. Yeah. And it's always seen as like the positive. Right. But so in this movie, the god has evilly flooded the world in some way. Right. He sunk this island and also divided the peoples. So there's some real like flood Tower of Babel type imagery there. And then it's, you know, he's done it out of malice. And so it's the human and the demigod's job to bring the world back together, to unsink the island, to get this, you know, antediluvian world back, you know, like that was the good world, was the antediluvian one. So I do think it's interesting, you know, that sort of idea. You could definitely read the movie that way.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it definitely, I don't know if
you
has
have any thoughts about it.
Definitely has the therapeutic message that your friend is identifying. It's this self-help, by self-achievement, by coming into your own, you can solve all these problems. It is like if the myth of Prometheus were something your therapist told you over the course of over the course of a couple of sessions. I'm kind of two minds about this, because on the one hand, we've been complaining that these recent Disney features don't have villains, and this one actually does have a villain. Unfortunately, we don't see the villain, and we don't know why he doesn't want human beings to come together. All we know is that he hates humans, and he hates Maui because he helps humans, and he's going to hate, I've already, Matangi, because she helps Maui help humans. And so I think they could have made something a bit more interesting philosophically if we had any conception of why Nala, this god, is doing what he's doing. And maybe they could have introduced some productive tension. But instead, you get this problem where Moana is obviously good and obviously chosen, and Nala is bad because he goes against her, is the way it felt to me.
Right. Yeah. And there's also like, it felt like too much of a rehash of the first movie, you know, like the first movie, she's trying to reopen the oceans. And then in this movie, she still has to reopen the oceans. It's like she got through like the, like step one of reopening the oceans, but not step two, you know?
Yeah, and you do wonder what the first movie was for.
Right. And in the first one, I liked the resolution in the first one where it's, you know, the island goddess that's keeping the world from working. You know, it's not working because Maui stole her heart and the heart of Tifiki, is that right? So that, you know, that somehow transformed the relationship of the people with the god. Like, I don't know, I could get on board with the first one, but this one, you're right, like there was more of a chance for an actual antagonist, but we never meet him until the post credits scene.
And again, you can close your eyes and imagine the 8-episode version of this, where the first 15 minutes of the third episode, because I'm sure that's where it would have been, are an extended exploration of who Nala is and what motivates him. But instead, we don't get that. We literally do not see him, I guess, until the post-credits sequence. What does he look like?
I don't know. He's kind of... I don't know. I can't describe him well. I'm sorry. You'd think I'd be better at describing by this point. On, you know, the seeing as we have a audio medium discussing visual things,
which we've been doing for 13 years or whatever.
Yeah, not quite that long. We started in 2017. I looked it up because I was trying to figure out if Moana came up.
For some reason, I was thinking it was like 2014. Anyway, what does it matter?
Well, that's because you've been podcasting since you were, you know, a baby.
Actually invented the medium. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, I know. That people don't know.
It's some of the things in this movie did not feel like a wasted opportunity. The crew is not a wasted opportunity. The crew never should have existed. This felt like a wasted opportunity. They had something that could have been a really interesting villain in a decade or so where Disney has not had interesting villains when they've had villains at all. And the first Moana was, I think, the first example of that, wasn't it? Where the villain was not really a villain.
Yeah. I think that's, I'm trying to look back through our credits. Zootopia definitely had a villain, which is the movie right before Moana.
Well, they had the thing they'd been doing since Frozen, where the villain seemed like he was a good guy until it wasn't.
Right. Yeah.
The god here could have been an interesting return to colorful villains.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, we know the reason. The reason is they had to cut 5/8 of this movie, and that was something that they felt they could do without.
Yeah, it's a sad situation, and it's just so frustrating, Michael, because it's like how did that even come to be? Like, this is a studio that at this point, as you've called it, the Imperial Era, like, they're planning these things years and years out. Like, how do you get yourself into a situation where you're rushing to pivot on something like that, you know? Like, you've been developing a miniseries, and then you decide to pivot it to a theatrical, and it's like, well, this will be fine. Like, I don't understand.
I didn't look at the dates. I wonder what movie flopped and they said, we've got to bring Moana back. Moana's a big hit. Moana is a character of color. I bet something like Strange World flopped. I'm looking at the list. That would have been 2022. It flopped. They looked at Wish. They knew Wish was going to be a dog turd. They had to know that. And so they said, what can we do? Let's bring Moana back. I bet you anything that's what happened. And Moana is like, just, you could print money with it because everybody loves that movie. In 2022, they would have been much more concerned than they were 10 years before, or even frankly, probably today, with the fact that Moana is full of non-white characters. Which is, you know, not a problem. But one of the great things about the original Moana is how Polynesian it is, you know, how culturally bound it is. I don't have a problem with that. But I guarantee you it went into their calculations about what to do with this miniseries. And, you know, the real pain, Josh, is if they'd done this as an 8-episode miniseries, it would have been beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, the animation for a miniseries as opposed to a feature-length film, this would have been the best animated Disney Plus series they'd ever done.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it could have been really something, you know.
Maybe they'll one day release it. Do you know? Did they actually make it and cut it, or did they cut it at the script level? They cut it at the script level, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it was I don't think they'd gotten into the animation yet.
That's too bad.
Yeah, they would never do that anyway. Oh, maybe they would. I don't know. It's hard to say never on anything. But it's hard to imagine a world where they say, hey, you know what? We made a mistake here. Let's give you the full thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It would be very...
Well, they released the Snyder Cut of Justice League, which I did not see the original cut nor the Snyder cut, so I don't have an opinion.
No, you're right. These things do happen. But I mean, that is a good point, that these things do happen. But I feel like they happen at, you know, the adult nerd fanboy level. You know, like, there's 10 versions of Alien or whatever. You
right,
know.
Right. Also, this movie made a Hawaiian mountain of money, just bucks going all the way down to the ocean floor. So it's not like, it's not like everybody hated this movie. It flopped. And so they need to do something to bring everybody back to Moana. I mean, I don't know that anybody really loved this movie, but it made mountains of money. So,
yeah, which is a weird thing to me. Like, that's also just, I mean, that's good for them, I guess.
I get bad for us.
Bad for us, but yeah.
But good, I mean, it, them, it shows you that Disney's contempt for its audience. These pigs will eat whatever slop we give them. It's correct. I mean, we will. Or not we. You and I haven't paid for it. I guess. Yeah. You can go see it in the theater, did you?
Yeah. No, I definitely did not go see it in the theater. So
we watched it on Disney Plus, though.
Yeah, which is still, you know, they're still making money through that also. So
not much. I mean, and that's the truth. They even if this movie had flopped, they would have made more money from it by releasing it theatrically than they would have on Disney Plus. I don't think any of the streaming services actually make money. Mm-hmm. They certainly don't make the sort of money you would imagine them to, which ought to make sense given they're what, $8 a month? How many people do you have to make $10 million movies and then make your money back on $8 a month? Not to mention all the licensing you're doing for the old television shows and everything. Those streamers, I don't know, there's some sort of shell game going on with them, and eventually it's going to lose, and they will have removed any sort of infrastructure to continue to watch movies at home even. But this is my typical anti-internet technology rant, I know. But this is my theory. You know, I still buy DVDs, though. I did not buy the DVD if I wanted to, just for the record.
Okay.
if it indeed exists.
That's the other thing. Like you said, they've removed the infrastructure. Like how,
We were talking about this a few years ago. You had some show on Disney Plus you really liked, and they just removed it without a trace.
Yeah, Flora and Ulysses. Oh yeah. Although you can get that, you can now buy that through iTunes or whatever. But at the time, it was totally gone. At the time they originally removed it. So yeah. Shout out to Flora and Ulysses, though. That's a great movie. Way better than Moana 2.
Did you buy it on iTunes?
I did, yeah. So,
well, yeah, if you downloaded it, you kind of own it, I guess.
Yeah. As long as you keep a downloaded version on your computer. Because they can remove it from... Like, I mean, this is the crazy world that we live in. Like... All the stuff that you buy off of iTunes, Amazon, whatever, any digital product that you buy, if they decide to remove it from the store and you don't have it downloaded, like, tough luck for you, you know?
Buy your media, everybody. So, buy it.
That's right. Buy
own things. Buy it. Don't let them drag us into this feudalist nightmare that they're trying to make us live in where we don't own anything. Josh, do you know that there are services where you rent clothes? People don't buy clothes, they rent their clothes. I'm disturbed.
I did not know that. Yeah.
I do want to say something good about this movie because it really is substantially better than both Strange World and Wish. I agree, it's three bad movies in a row. But this is by far the best of those three. And I think Strange World is probably the worst. I don't remember what I said about Wish when we talked about it, but looking back on it, I have way more unpleasant feelings about Strange World than about Wish. Wish was at least doing something kind of interesting visually.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and really think about that. anyway, say something kind, Michael. End us on a high note.
The animation in Moana 2 is really lovely. The ocean looks beautiful, just like it did in the first one. They do some interesting... And they did this one in the first one, too. They do some interesting different types of animation when you come across different types of characters. So the little coconuts look almost like claymation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see them trying new things. The end scene with Moana and her friends fighting the storm god, the storm looks amazing. And there's a lot of good movement in terms of how they're animating that fight scene. That it's very dynamic, but it's also, you're able to follow it. I can never follow fight scenes in Marvel movies. I never have the slightest idea of what's going on because they cut so fast. But I think that's a really superior animated action sequence there at the end, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of what they're doing. Okay, fine. But it looks really good. And so it is nice to know that they're still capable of animation that reaches new heights. I will at least say that, even if I think the character design is ugly.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's nothing really negative to say about the animation. It's all on the plot, the story, the songs, you know. Even if the story had made a little more sense, that I could have forgiven the songs even. But unfortunately, it just didn't all come together, which is too bad. I'm sure there's people who are working really hard on, you know, the animation side and should rightly be, you know, getting the credit that they're due. It's the pearls before swine, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Dwayne Johnson, who I think part of the reason this movie suffers is that he's not in half of it.
Yeah, I mean, he as Maui, and even that song, I mean, we both don't like the Chihu song, but, like, I mean, you know, credit to him. He's obviously not a musical type Broadway star singer, but he goes for it, you know, like he's going to sing his heart out, you know, so it's a terrible song, but good for him it's not his fault that this movie suffers. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think he's a world historically charismatic person. I think if he wanted to take over Rome in 50 BC, he could have done it without too much trouble. So you are just kind of waiting for him for the first half of the movie. Like, where is he? He so outclasses every other voice actor in the movie, just in terms of you wanting to be in the room with him. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And he's got the best, I mean, the Moana bees, like that line alone, like, kind of makes the movie, you know, like, although we could call this whole movie a Moana bee, I guess.
I had trouble telling that they were supposed to be dressed up as Moana because all of the people on Moana's island, except the crew, they all have the same face.
Mm.
Which, there's something bad to say about the animation. That seems to have been done pretty hastily. You know what was weird, though? The plot of this movie is that they are an insular island and that they've been cut off from other people for so long. Why are there accents on the island? Why do some people have an American accent and some people have a New Zealand accent? Shouldn't they all have about the same accent? Isn't it about 80 people living on this island?
You gotta mix it up, you know?
I guess. I do have some questions about endogamy and incest on this island, depending on how long they've been. Maybe that's why everybody looks the same. Hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
More realistic than I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to complain about. The kid, the kid's sister.
Uh-huh.
Annoying. I didn't find it emotionally moving or anything like that. I just thought the character was annoying and their relationship was annoying. Am I just mean and old and grumpy?
Maybe. I mean, I didn't find her annoying as much as just, I don't know, like... Yeah, it felt like they were trying to give Moana something, you know, like to that she was connected to some purpose, but like because she's fighting for her island and her people, obviously, but they really wanted Moana to have to face a series of difficult choices, and in facing those difficult choices, she would grow as a person. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they wanted to do.
And instead, so, she faced no difficult choices.
Well, so there's a little bit of a difficult choice of, like, what if I never come back? What if I don't get to see my baby sister grow up? You know, and they couldn't they needed a new character because she's already done that in the first movie with her parents, right?
Right.
And with her parents, there was definitely more of a, you know, dad's holding me back, and I just need to, you know, like it was more of a runaway type thing than a, you know, like, a heart stirring, difficult decision in that way. Like I have two goods here, and which one's the better good, you know? So I think they were trying to establish that, and it just like everything else in this movie, it never paid off. There was never any.
We didn't have time to do it. Yeah, that could have been interesting. How long after the first movie is this set?
It's supposed to be 3 years.
What if they'd done? Yeah. Now here's my pitch to Disney. If I could go back in time, what if they made it 8 years in the future, which is how long it's been since the actual movie? So what if they made it a real time difference? And so Moana would be what, 25 now? 24, 25
years
old.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So what if they did that and she was married? She was married to probably not the guy who goes on the raft with her, although they could do something interesting by him still going. But she's married to just some normie on the island, and they have a baby. And that's what's keeping her from going. And she has to make this very difficult choice between her own child and the good of her people. I feel like the stakes on that would have been substantially higher. But again, that would be them encouraging young women to get married at 21 years old or whatever. And Disney would never do that. But
that's what I was just going to say. Let's put a stake in the ground. Like, what year will the first Disney princess have a child?
Yeah. Oh, but it would have been so much more interesting, wouldn't it? That you would have risked people saying, oh, Moana has made the wrong choice. You know, you would have risked her not being perfect. And then you could have this moment where when the ocean doesn't answer back and she can't communicate with the kid anymore, where she thinks she made the wrong choice, you know, where she has an actual moment of self-recrimination for valuing the wrong thing. Instead of that moment, like everything else in this movie, just kind of drifting by because they don't have time to. I mean, this would be in addition to keeping it an 8-episode miniseries, I suppose. But I just found the relationship between them to be kind of manipulative and false. And I think it would have been better if it had been her daughter. But that would have raised a host of other problems. Why is the husband not going? Well, then you could say, well, somebody needs to stay behind with the kid. But then would the husband be jealous of the man who was going with her instead? Which, I mean, I think that could have been interesting. I don't know. This is another one of the...
different movie.
You can always tell when it's a bad movie because you and I end up pitching a better movie. Yeah, we saved... Right. Do you remember we saved Home on the Range, too? You came up with a much better movie than Home on the Range. I can't remember the details of it. But once you pitched it, I was like, well, damn, I would really love fun. To watch that movie instead of the one that we actually had to watch.
Yeah.
Boy, I would love to see a 25-year-old Disney protagonist with a baby. That would be countercultural. That would be interesting. Have we ever? There's never been a Disney.
Well, as soon as I said that, I was thinking, I feel like, so I don't know, because I haven't kept up with the larger Little Mermaid world, but I feel like there's like a dark-haired, like, Ariel-ish, like,
One of the directed video sequels.
Did they end up having a kid in one of those?
I think that's possible. I think that's right. So. But those aren't real.
Well, yeah, obviously.
You know, the only way they could...
I don't know.
The one way they could do it is by doing a sequel to Princess and the Frog. I feel like it would be very realistic for Tiana to have a baby.
All right, bring back hand-drawn 2D animation. Let's go.
Yeah, that's two birds with one stone.
Yeah, that'd be really great. I'm here for that.
My version of this movie is better, right? Like, what I just said would have made this movie 50% better than it was.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you'd have... This movie was lacking... I think part of the problem is it's... Like you said, there's a lot of, you know, therapy talk and psychobabble in these movies these days, which you've been more sensitive to than I have. But, this whole idea of, like, self... self-improvement through self-growth and stuff, like, is so, it's such a key part to what this movie seems to be trying to do, if it's trying to do anything. I feel like it's, like I said at the beginning, it's difficult to really nail it down. What is this movie trying to do? But that seems to be the journey they're trying to put Moana on. And, it's finding some sort of self-fulfillment through, you know, the whole Chihu song is level up, right? So she's leveled up. She's moved from human to demigod now. She's already, amazing human, and now she's, by the end of this movie, she's a demigod. So,
like, she'd be grinding.
That leveling, yeah. But that leveling up in reality, at least, you know, in my life, you know, I became a better person through having a wife, through having children, you know, and I know that doesn't work for everyone. I'm not saying that out there is, you know, but it seems to be in some ways, like, it's that constant giving of yourself to an actual person in an actual committed relationship that changes you as a human. And in this movie, Moana doesn't have any of those relationships. All she has is the, I've got to save the world, you know, like, so her self-sacrifice is for the good of the world, but there's no, you know, the closest that she has to any sort of tight individual bond is with her baby sister.
Well, and there's no actual,
she doesn't actually have those committed relationships.
And there's no actual self-sacrifice. She goes out and does the thing she wanted to do to begin with, the thing she did in the last movie. There's no real sense that she's actually ever seriously considered not going out to sea again. So I don't even know if you could call it a self-sacrifice. Her going out and being a girl boss saves the world. And she'll be back to see her sister. There's no real sense that she won't.
Right.
For a moment, though, I did wonder if they'd have the guts to kill her.
Moana?
Yeah. Yeah.
When she So I was going to say on that, like, actually, trying to find good in this movie, I was really surprised how long they linger on her and Maui's holding her and she's dead. Like, they have not let a scene like that hold for that long since, like, Jungle Book. they usually just fly through those scenes. In fact, there's another scene earlier in the movie. Like, she gets struck by lightning twice in this movie. And the first time she gets struck by lightning, she has a vision and all that sort of stuff. But then when they flash back to reality, everybody is running towards her. And in their act of running towards her, she's already, like, awake and back up. There's no, like, they don't hold on that for even half a second, you know, to let people even worry about Moana. There's somebody in the back of the room who did, you know, who missed the whole thing. But, like, with the, when she dies in the ocean, trying to reach, the mountaintop that's under the sea, they linger on that for quite a while. And there is, you know, you don't, because you're watching a movie and it's, you know, whatever I said, what, 63rd in the series, you know that she's not going to die. Like, there's just no way she's going to die. But when all the ancestors show up, there is that, like, oh, you know, like, there's an alternate reality movie where they show up to take her, you know,
into the ancestor realm. Maybe a more interesting movie. She doesn't go back to the sister. And so that pays off there. And it's not as easy as it appears to be.
Right. Yeah.
They're not going to make the more interesting movie.
No, for sure. But, like, yeah, I could definitely see that. Like, oh, all the ancestors show up and they actually take her from Maui rather than restoring Maui. And, you know, then they get their sacred weapons with the hook and the oar and all that sort of stuff. So,
and that was the other thing. I thought it would have been interesting if either they had killed Maui. I think that probably would have been a little easy. But what if in her becoming a demigoddess, he actually loses his demigod status, that his tattoos are gone for good?
Because there can only be one.
Yeah. I mean, that also would have been more interesting than what they did. The denouement of the movie just kind of came too easily without a real sense of loss. Anytime I talk like this, I think, oh, I'm criticizing a children's cartoon. But these movies want to be important. They want to say something ethically important. They just don't have any real sense of ethics or mythology or anything else. There's no because they want it simultaneously to be capital I important and to sell a bunch of lunchboxes.
Right. And I think it's fair to criticize the movies because they are like they're shaping. I mean, to go back to one of the things that, you know, we used to say in our introductions all the time is shaping our imaginations. So at that level, these are things that are shaping our imaginations. And when they are at their best, you know, there is something to them that is deeper and richer, and that even an adult can get something. Like, they're not adult movies, you know, like The Jungle Book isn't an adult movie, but there is something in The Jungle Book that I feel like, or The Lion King, or, you know, Bambi, or whatever, you know, Sleeping Beauty, I think was your number one, that as an adult, you can still watch it. And there is some sort of, you know, like you said, like a deeper core meaning within the movie that the modern, at least the last three, have been lacking.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. We liked Ralph Breaks the Internet, I guess.
Yeah, we...
I kind of liked Encanto, even though Encanto is more guilty than any other movie in the modern era of the kind of therapy
speak. Yeah, I liked Encanto much more than you did. And Ryan the Last Dragon is a favorite in our house. We watch that one pretty regularly still. And I think it holds up, you know, like it's not annoying for sure. I mean, there's annoying bits in it, but it's a good movie. So I'm not ready to throw Disney all the way out. You know, it is a streak of three, you know, that it's not good to have a streak of three. You know, what did they say? Once is a coincidence, twice is a, or twice, once is a fluke, twice is a coincidence, and three times you're trending. Is that it? Something
well,
like
hey,
that.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe so. Zootopia 2 will be the one that breaks the streak.
Yeah. I don't have high hopes for that, given how much both of you and I hated the first Zootopia, but you never know, you know? You never know. All right. Well, it's been fun discussing this movie with you, Michael. Our press liaison is Christian Filipic. We're on the old interwebs at christianhumanist.org. You can help us continue this conversation by reaching out to us at beforetheywerelive@gmail.com. You can also check out Michael's weekly podcast, A Symposium of Popular Song, over at Front Porch Republic. And we also want to encourage you to set your podcast player's dials to the Christian Humanist Radio Network. You'll find an abundance of old shows there and the occasional new one. Michael and I know there are a great number of podcasts out there you could be spending your time on, so thank you for spending the time with us. For Michael Farmer, I'm Joshua Altman-Schofer, and this is not the end of our story. Together, we rise as one.